Now, my sofa guest with us today, pulling up our virtual sofa, is Tom Bowles. Tom, a bit of a blast from the past. It was a few years ago that he was our resident astronomer, and he left when he got poorly with leukemia. So I was really pleased, I have to say, to hear from him again recently. And as well as getting himself better, I gather he's been working on his first novel, just published, which is called Dark Energy.
On the sofa. BBC.
Radio Sofa. Hello, Tom.
Hello there.
How lovely to hear your lovely non-Suffolk words or dialect.
I was trying to work out the last time we spoke, Leslie. I think it must have been 6+ years ago, I think.
Is it really? I know it's ages and ages ago, and we've missed you lots, you know, Tom.
Oh, thank you for that. That's lovely to hear.
So we'll talk about your book in just a minute or two, but having dropped the fact that you were poorly into conversation, tell me how that's all gone, because you've had a bone marrow transplant, you've had chemo, haven't you?
I've had chemo, I've had a bone marrow transplant, and I'm now sort of 5+ years in remission, which is... Well, the experts just tell me that's good news. Once you get over 5 years, things are terrific. I can't speak too highly for the National Health Service. I mean, they've really pulled out all the stops. Ipswich Hospital in particular. If I could mention sort of Dr. Addie Morecombe, Dr. Chalmers, and my specialist nurse, Jane Chapels. I mean, they've really looked after me terrifically.
Because it's one of these things that I guess just came out of the blue and a really scary thing to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I just went to my local doctor and I got a routine blood test, and it showed my white blood cells were abnormal. And if I hadn't had that test, goodness knows, you know, how long it would have taken to actually diagnose it. So I was lucky I got diagnosed quite early. So that meant that the treatment could start quite early, and of course, the earlier you treat it, the better the chances of success. So I'm an NHS success story, I'm afraid.
I think it's so lovely to hear, because I did wonder over the years. I was really worried about you. So, yeah. And was it pretty grueling as well? Was the treatment quite hard work?
It wasn't that bad actually. The chemo itself was. Well, it was a bit annoying. I mean, I lost my hair and whatnot, and took a little while for that to grow back in again. But, you know, the real anticlimax was the actual transplant itself. I was lying in the hospital bed, and they connected this bag up to me, and they put this orange liquid into my arm. And they said, "That's it." I said, "What?" And that was it. That was the bone marrow transplant completed. It was just like getting a drip in a hospital. And things just started to look up after that. It was terrific.
Isn't it phenomenal? So they kill off basically all your own blood cells and then give you some new ones.
That's right.
Phenomenal, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. Well, I'm really pleased that you're getting better. It has affected you there, hasn't it? So I gather you can't. It's neuropathy, isn't it, which gives you odd sensations in your legs?
Yeah, I've lost some feeling in my legs. It's not a major thing, but you know, it's just not as good as what it was before. But I do some exercises which sort of help to do that. And you know, it's amazing how the treatment has changed for cancer over the years, and they've actually changed their approach in many ways. You know, when people are going through chemo, they sort of tended to tell them to rest and take it easy. They've changed that nowadays. They're saying get out and exercise and keep yourself fit. And we have a local group in Coddenham which does Nordic walking. And Jane McPherson's our instructor. And the Macmillan nurses, via the National Health Service, are actually supplying free Nordic walking courses for some of the patients. And I've joined that group, so I go Nordic walking, and actually doing the walking helps my legs tremendously.
Fantastic. It's good for the whole of your body, isn't it? Because you swing the old arms as well.
Well, Jane keeps telling me it's a bit like swimming, you know, except there's no water there. So you're using your legs, you're using your arms, you're using your upper body, and it's really good exercise. So, and I tell you, if I miss a few days, I really feel it. So my legs start to stiffen up a little bit. So, yeah, I keep doing it.
Keep doing it. Well, that's brilliant, yeah. Isn't it? I gather you've let your... Because you moved to Cottenham originally because it had dark skies, so you could put your observatory there. But I gather you've passed your observatory on to others now. Is that right?
Yes. You know, when you get diagnosed with something like leukemia, you don't know what the outcome's going to be. And I thought, I better get rid of the telescopes now, so that I didn't want to leave it for my wife Rita to sort out. So I demolished the observatory and I gave the telescopes away to societies, local astronomical societies. It may have been a bit premature.
I was going to say, do you wish you hadn't now?
But I don't know. I mean, I'd probably find it quite hard to stay up all night. I mean, I used to do night shifts all the time, as you know, Leslie. And, you know, I'm getting older as well, of course. And that doesn't make it all that much easier, so...
We're going to talk about your book now, and then we'll come back and talk astronomy, because, I mean, you have the wonderful... The thing that people might not know about you, but you are the only person who has ever discovered 155 supernovae. Those are exploding stars. Have I got that right?
You have it dead right, yeah. Yeah, I hold the world record for discovering supernova for an individual. So, I mean, there are some big teams in the States who have discovered more than that using major big telescopes. But as an individual, I hold the world record, yeah.
So you used to spend quite a lot of time looking out, didn't you, for them?
I did, yeah. I spent almost every clear night looking for them. And I've my telescopes were sort of semi-automatic. They sort of pointed to the sky, took images one after the other. Then I had to sit and compare the new image with an old image and look for differences between the pictures. And then if suddenly a little star peeped up in that picture, then, there was a good chance it was a supernova. So then I had to do a whole lot of checks I had to do just to make sure that I didn't get it wrong. Because, you know, if I got it wrong and I alerted a major telescope, it would stop what it was doing and go to confirm the supernova. And I'd be very unpopular if I did that. So I had to be absolutely sure that my discovery was genuine. Well, that was quite good. It was 155 discoveries, and I didn't make one single false claim. Every one of them was genuine, so that was good.
It's a brilliant record to hold, I have to say. It takes us nicely on, doesn't it, to your novel. So you, as you said in your notes to me, lockdown to you was nothing new, really, because you'd had to do it all when you had your bone marrow transplant.
Indeed, yeah, because my immune system was compromised, so I had to go into lockdown for a while anyway. So that was quite normal. But, you know, the discovering supernova, it's sort of... Supernova are exploding stars, so if you look at them, you can tell how far away they are. And they used the supernova to actually discover that the universe was accelerating. And to explain that acceleration, they come up with dark energy. Now, dark energy is a mysterious energy that fills everywhere. So it's a real thing. I mean, I didn't make it up just to write the book. Dark energy really exists. It fills all of space. So... that's where I got the idea from. This sort of working with the supernova inspired the story. So one thing fed off the other.
And I know you've written textbooks and all sorts in the past, haven't you? But never a novel. Has this been sitting there waiting to be written?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, God bless his soul, he's dead now. He died at the end of last year. But he always was trying to write a novel. And he started dozens of them, you know, and he never quite finished them. So I suddenly knuckled down during lockdown and I wrote this one. This one had been hovering in my brain for a while. And I finally got it onto paper. And from what I've heard so far, I'm getting really good feedback on it.
So tell us as much as you can tell us about it. I know it's the first of... It's going to be a trilogy, isn't it?
It's going to be a trilogy, yeah. The first book is called Dark Energy, and the hero is an astronomer. Surprise, surprise. but I'll say that it's not a sci-fi book. It's an action mystery adventure book. It's a story of Brad Willis, who's the astronomer who goes and does investigations for MI6. The backstory is that Brad Willis managed to save one of the operatives of MI6 when he was working in South America. And Mike Riley, the fictitious leader of MI6, brought him on board as a sort of consultant, if you like. And the action really starts when Brad receives an anonymous call from Switzerland telling him there will be an explosion taking place in California. And he gets involved in that. And, of course, the fact that it's California involves the CIA as well. So the CIA and MI6 get together. And they finally send Brad Willis on a mission to solve where the explosion's happening. Because a second explosion then happens in Switzerland. And, of course, murders start happening. People start getting killed and whatnot. So, yeah, the whole story develops from that.
Fascinating. I love it. You say murder the right way. I think only people from Scotland should say that word anyway.
Yeah, I sound like Taggart, don't I?
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So you've written the first one. You're in the middle of the second one, I think, aren't you?
Yes, I'm in the middle of the second one. The second one is he goes to Antarctica because in Antarctica there's these mysterious radio bursts which are knocking out all the power supplies of the stations there, especially at the South Pole station. And it's so powerful it can cause planes to drop from the sky. So that's his next investigation. I've got this marvellous sort of fascination with Antarctica because it's a wonderful place. There's colours on the ice and, you know, the book, the working title I've got for it is Shades of White. And anybody who's been to Antarctica say they're amazed by the number of shades of white they see in the snow and the ice. Because you imagine the place is white, but it's not. It's lilac and it's blue and it's green.
Have you been?
I've not been, but I'd love to go. I think I'm probably a bit old to go now. But it's such a fascinating place.
Yeah. I'd love to go. It's one of those places that I would love to go and see as well. Yeah. So, and have you self-published your book?
I have self-published it, yes.
Brilliant. So people can find it, usual sorts of places, Amazon. If they search for you, I gather it's the easiest way. So
yes, it's probably easy to search for my name because there's a lot of non-fiction books with dark energy in the title because it's an actual real sort of subject. So, yeah, it's available on Amazon. If anybody lives near Codnam, it's been sold in the local shop as well. So
brilliant.
If anybody's not au fait with computers, they can drop into Codnam and pick one up.
Brilliant. So Tom Bowles, and Bowles is B-O-L-E-S, so Tom
Indeed.
Bowles. And I'll have all the details as well, so you can always ping me an email. I'm going to play a piece of music, then we're going to come back and we'll talk a bit about your astronomy. It's not a career as such, is it? Because it was always a hobby. It was never your living, was it, Tom?
It was always a hobby, but, you know, I tell you, it got so serious and so obsessive that I almost consider myself a professional because for the last 20 years, I've been doing it almost full-time.
And I know you met all sorts of people within the business, didn't you? Patrick Moore and all sorts you were involved with as well, weren't you?
Yes, Patrick Moore came to Codnam and opened the observatory. And, you know, there are famous people like Brian May from Queen. He's an astronomer. He did his PhD in sort of dust that exists within the solar system. And he's now quite active in the astronomical community. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
People.
There's lots to talk about. We'll be back with you in just a minute or two. You've got time to grab yourself a cup of tea, hopefully.
Thank you very much.
Off as we speak. We're talking, I guess, gazing skywards with telescopes at the moment. Tom Bowles is our guest. He's an astronomer. He was our resident astronomer for a while, but he's just written his first fiction, a book of fiction. It's a novel called Dark Energy, a Brad Willis adventure, written by Tom. Two more to come. But Tom, if you go back, so we used to talk astronomy, didn't we? You used to come in and tell us amazing things. And I think you were quite a young chap when you first got into astronomy.
Oh yeah, I was 11 years old when I first got into it. I mean, I went to school and one of my friends in the same class as me brought in a telescope, a sort of ex-government naval telescope, and he let me look through it and I was hooked. I mean, I saw the Seven Sisters, I saw Saturn, I saw Jupiter all in one night, and it just sort of blew my mind. I said, I want one of those, I'm going to do that, and I've been doing that ever since. Yeah.
When you left, you had to leave school because your dad was made redundant. So I guess you never considered the thought at that point that you could make a living as an astronomer.
No. I left school at 16 because, you know, my dad was redundant. I had to go out and get myself a job to help support the family and whatnot. And so everything else sort of took the back seat for a little while. I did do an astronomy degree. I did an astronomy degree and I did a biochemistry degree, but I did that as a mature student as life went on. So I got there in the end, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but that's really interesting because so you worked your way up, and I know you were director of various companies, weren't you? So you always had that running alongside, but you went back to night school, you did all the exams, so you were able to carry on with your love of astronomy as well?
Yes. But I mean, when you love a subject as much as I do, keeping up with it and learning it is really quite easy. Because, you know, you become like a sponge. You just absorb everything you can possibly know about the subject. And, you know, you remember it so easily that learning is such a little effort. So really, as a task, it was very easy to do.
And you mentioned that Patrick Moore came and opened your observatory. Did you get involved to work at Jodrell Bank and places like that?
I've never ever worked at a professional observatory. I've given lectures at Jodrell Bank and I've given lectures at Mill Hill Observatory. And, of course, we've done TV programmes on both of those where I've sort of been a co-presenter on it. But I've never actually had time on a professional observatory. But having said that, the discoveries that I do get checked out with telescopes like the Hubble Space Telescope. Check probably a dozen of my discoveries, and the two big Keck telescopes in Hawaii, which were the biggest telescopes in the world for some time, they have also checked the discoveries out to confirm them and do the analysis, because there are about six or seven different types of supernova, and you need to get what they call a spectrum of the supernova to decide which type it is. And what they do is they break the colours, the light coming from the star, down into like a rainbow, and then the rainbow acts like a fingerprint, a bit like a scan code that you use in a supermarket, and that tells you all the elements that are in the star, and it tells them what kind of supernova that it is.
How did you get into that side of it to start off with? Would you say that's your specialism?
What, supernova?
Yeah.
Well, I was working in the UK, and even, you know, Suffolk's a lovely place. It's got lovely skies, and there's not that much light pollution here. But even given that, it's difficult to do really deep things in the sky because the sky's got a certain glow attached to it. So supernova was one of the few things that I could do given the sky conditions in the UK.
So that's how it all came about. When did you first come to Suffolk? Because it never feels as if our skies are that dark these days. I guess you, as someone who would like to talk about how perhaps we ought to get rid of some of the light that we have.
Well, I came to Suffolk in 2000, so I've been here 21, nearly 22 years now. And I came here especially for the skies. And I must admit, over the 20 years, there has been a little bit of deterioration in the light pollution.
Yeah.
But it's still not as bad as what it is in other parts of the country. It's still a very good area for sky watching.
It's amazing. I've been reading a book by someone called Matt Gore, who's written a book all about going outside in the dark and so on. It makes you realise, doesn't it? Most of us don't take any notice of the stars, but they're phenomenal if you look up on a really dark night.
Yeah, if you go out in the night when there's no moon around, and just give yourself about 20 minutes, 25 minutes to allow your eyes to adapt, because it does take that long. I mean, your pupils open up very, very quickly when you go outside in the dark, but there's chemicals that form in the back of your eyes and your retina, which take about 20 minutes to build up. And once they are fully operational, it's surprising just how much you can see just looking up. And, you know, sometimes I just go out and just enjoy the sky. And if you know the constellations, you know the major stars, you can see the Milky Way. and you can plot where the planets are. It's so satisfying. I mean, there's some things, I mean, the world is full of change, but one thing that doesn't change very often is the sky. And the sky looks almost exactly the same today as what it was when I was 11 years old. And I get a feeling of nostalgia as well when I look at it. It's almost when I look at the surface of the moon through a small telescope, I see its craters and its mara, its seas, which are volcanic sort of outflows. And they look exactly the same as what they did when I was 11 years old. And it's something nice to hold on to.
Something really comforting.
Comforting, yes. Yeah. That's a good word.
I've just got travel news and we'll come back because I know that your love of astronomy has taken you around the world. Tom Bowles is our guest. Don't forget his book that he's published, his first novel, Dark Energy, A Brad Willis Adventure. They always say write about what you know. So he's an astronomer, is Brad. Astronomer Tom Bowles, author Tom Bowles is with us now. Although you've written, so this is your first novel, but you've written quite a few other books, haven't you, Tom?
Yes, I've been a regular contributor to Patrick Moore's annual yearbook and a few other books that I've written on astronomical imaging, taking pictures of the sky and capturing some of the faint, fuzzy objects, galaxies and star clusters and planets. So I've written an awful lot about techniques, astronomical techniques. And I've written about actually supernova hunting as well, because there's quite a lot of people around the world who have become interested in doing it, and it's to try and encourage them as well. It's acted as motivation for them.
So tell me about, because I know being an astronomer has taken you all over the world, hasn't it? You've lived in Ohio, you lived in Germany. I know you went to, you used to do lectures, didn't you, on the Cunard liners?
I did indeed, yes, and I did that right up until my diagnosis. And I might go back to that one day. It depends how my legs perform. I mean, to be on the Atlantic when it gets quite stormy, you can sort of move around a little bit. And even when my legs were good, I used to stagger around the stage sometimes when the ship was rolling. But it's a really lovely life to be in, and it's very satisfying because, you know, for about 1 or 2 weeks, you can become a superstar. Everybody in the ship knows you. Everybody in the ship recognizes you. And you, of course, don't know them, but you have conversations at dinner and at meal times and in the corridors, and it's a really wonderful feeling.
I remember you telling me about it, because they have a planetarium. Was it the Queen Mary, Queen Mary II, that has a planetarium?
As far as I know, it's the only planetarium on a ship at sea, and it's a full-size planetarium. And I went and I got trained on that, and I used to design and run planetarium programs. So you would just sort of put the lights out and you'd bring an artificial sky up. And it was actually lovely because we had some graphics in the planetarium which actually showed part of the Queen Mary. We could show its funnel and its upper deck. And then when the sun set, the sort of the sky went dark, and the deck sort of disappeared and the stars appeared, and then you could take people around using a laser pointer and point out all the different stars, the constellations and where the planets are. And you could do it for the actual night that you were doing the planetarium show on, and you could do it for the angle that the ship was pointing at. And so after the planetarium show, you could take people up on deck and actually show them in the real sky what they just watched in the planetarium. The way the things melded together was lovely.
Wow, I think you should definitely go back. Yeah. You could just sit on a chair on the stage if necessary.
Couldn't you? No, you see, I'm very animated. I like to walk around and swing my arms madly. Uh-huh. And, you know, sitting in a chair probably wouldn't work out for me very well.
I definitely think you should go back. Is there a site that you haven't seen that you would still like to see?
I don't know. I've seen just about everything. I've seen solar eclipses are the things that I think is one of the most marvelous sights. I've managed to see that now. I've seen that. I've seen the Northern Lights properly up in Tronsk in Norway. I went on a cruise up there and I was a lecturer on the cruise to the Northern Lights. And I did some nice video movies as well. I took time delay photographs using a camera and a tripod. And that worked out very well. They actually use those videos on the cruise DVD now. And there's just so many things to see that you're really stuck for ideas.
But it's an amazing world, isn't it? And that's what's so phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So book one, Dark Energy, A Brad Willis Adventure by Tom Bowles. Two is half done. The third one's still to come as well.
Yeah, the third one's still to come. There's this thread running through the books where Brad suffers because he was in his car and it was hit by another car, a Triumph TR3, and his wife Carol got killed in front of him. And he suffers from a form of PTSD, a very unusual form of PTSD. But it means that when he's stressed, his body fills with adrenaline and he can do things that, you know, maybe he wouldn't be able to do under normal circumstances. And that thread's running through it. And he's trying to find out who the driver of the other car was, because it was a hit and run. He got hit by the car and the driver drove off. And the end of the first book, he's getting clues about who the driver is. And he's got some information to help him identify the Triumph. And I can't tell you too much.
Don't spoil it. I was going to say, don't spoil it. You've got some writing to do. Well, Tom, it's been so lovely chatting to you. Thank you so much for getting in touch. Good luck with your books.
Thank you.
It's brilliant. So we can say Tom Bowles, astronomer, supernova discoverer, and now author as well, a novelist, can't we?
You can indeed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. You take care. Tom Bowles with us. So, Dark Energy, A Brad Willis Adventure. This is book one. Look out then to book two. I'm sure Tom will let me know when book two and book three are published as well. See if you can get a copy. I haven't read this yet properly. I've started it, but I haven't read it yet. And Tom signed it to me, so I shall be reading that over the next week. So we're going to talk Hidden Gardens of Bury St Edmunds and news of a jigsaw festival that's happening in Newmarket.